This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Good afternoon, Winnipeg. Good afternoon, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live on TSN1290.ca and live here at the St. Vitale Center Food Hall, we welcome you to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of festive hockey talk for you on this Saturday afternoon. Alongside my colleagues Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. We say good afternoon to both of my colleagues, Richard and Ezra. Gentlemen, good to see you both. Always one of our favorite shows to do in the course of the year, being down here at St. Vitale Center Food Hall. A great cause, Toy Mountain, in support of the Salvation Army here in Winnipeg. Putting a smile on some people's faces, some kids' faces, who may not otherwise be able to enjoy a Christmas season, the holiday season that we have upcoming.
Oh, it's always great to be down here, Drew. It's a fun time, and it's a great atmosphere, and it was a great atmosphere last night at the MTS Center as well, so it's lots to talk about.
Absolutely, and we'll get into that momentarily. Great atmosphere here, Ezzy. Great atmosphere last night at MTS Center as well.
Absolutely. Third year doing this show, and we're right beside Victoria's Secret. So what more could we ask for?
Yeah, they've already suggested that you stay as far away as possible. So, I mean, I think that was a preliminary request from the powers that be here at St. Vitale Center. Let's get into it. We'll start with last night's Jets-Avalanche game. Obviously a 6-2 victory for the Winnipeg Jets. They were facing a Colorado Avalanche team on the second half of a back-to-back, a Colorado Avalanche team that has struggled thus far this season. And what at one point in time was a close-in-score 2-1 game, not really in pace of play and in control of the game, as the Jets were the dominant team for the most part, really exploded there in the third period, at the end of the second period, getting that big goal by Andrew Ladd, and the Jets winning in a cakewalk by that 6-2 margin.
Game wasn't really close at any point, Drew. This was a dominating performance by the Winnipeg Jets against a Colorado team that has really struggled all year, and I thought their struggles were certainly on display last night. The Jets took advantage of an opportunity and thought they were far and away the better team. And if you listen to Patrick Waugh's post-game comments, and we'll talk about that at length, but he also alluded to the fact that, you know, how you come out and perform at the beginning of the game will have a big effect on how you play after you've played the night before. And I thought the Jets really handled themselves quite well from the beginning of the game, and Colorado really didn't get much. You know, there was probably one prime scoring chance that Nathan MacKinnon had. Eric Johnson had a chance again, and MacKinnon again. Like, I'm talking before the game was out of hand in the third period. That's four chances I can't recall anymore. And aside from MacKinnon's breakaway, it's not like those were, you know, odd man rushes with two on ones or anything else. So Jets really were able to keep Colorado away from generating speed through the neutral zone, and I think that actually starts by sustaining pressure in the offensive zone and by having Colorado run around in their own zone, which they did essentially all evening.
Shots were 26-9 for the Jets after 40 minutes of play. That's a disparity that you don't see every day in the NHL, and really goes to show how much control the Jets had in that game against the Avs last night, Ezzy.
Yeah, Drew, halfway through the game, the Avalanche had 6 shots, I think it was, and you mentioned after 2, 9 shots, mm-hmm. But you know, Richie mentions the back-to-back games. It was a tough loss against Calgary, Sean Monahan getting that overtime winner, and they just didn't have the legs at all last night. And, you know, you talk about Nathan MacKinnon's chance there going for the top corner on Hutchinson on that breakaway, misses the net. But, you know, when Brian Little got that goal that was at first seemed like a beautiful save by Varlamov, to me, that's really was the turning point in the game there.
And the 2-1 goal in the first period. Let's get into the goals. We'll start with Chris Thorburn's first of the year assist to Paul Postma and Adam Party. Here's how Chris Thorburn's game-opening goal sounded.
First shot goal, a floater and a stick save made by Varlamov. Back toward the line, Party holds it. Far side, Postma, let a shot go, rebound, they score! Chris Thorburn! Off the point shot by Postma! His 98th point of his career, first of the season, and it's a big goal for Winnipeg. They lead it 1-0.
Nice to see Chris Thorburn get his first goal of the year. Nice to see the Jets get the first goal of the game, as they have been doing quite well for the last number of games. It's a 1-0 lead for the Jets, and they're in the game from the start. They're taking advantage of a weakened opponent.
They're able to play their fourth line a lot last night, Drew, a lot for the Jets, because they're playing against a team with another fourth line that isn't very threatening offensively. So when the Jets are not only able to play that fourth line, but able to have that fourth line play and be effective, it's a bonus. And this play starts Party on the blue line across ice to Postma. That line, I thought, played, that pairing, excuse me, played a lot better than they did against Edmonton earlier this week. And Postma and Rick and I were speaking about it last night on the postgame show. Simple shots at the net.
Sure.
Nothing crazy. Doesn't have to be a wild shot and missing the net and going the other way. Postma gets a shot on net, and Thorburn comes out of the corner and pops a rebound. And the Johnson Haida combination for Colorado last night, just that's their best pairing by far, and they weren't in a top form either.
Yeah, the Avalanche are very weak on the back end. As it's unlikely for throughout the rest of the year in the NHL, you're going to see a less likely scoring line than Chris Thorburn from Paul Postma and Adam Party.
Right, and they've taken a lot of heat this year, especially. That not only was that Thorb's first goal, it was his first point of the season.
Yeah.
And that line has had a lot of trouble scoring goals. Even Jim Slater, who has the most offensive ability on that line, he's still stuck with the one goal. So it was really nice for Thorburn to get that goal. He's had a rough time. You know, a guy like Thorburn, usually 4 or 5 goals a year is what you expect out of him, but especially considering how he started the season, 24, 25 games without a point. So it was nice to see that. And really, it opened up the floodgates for the Jets. As Richie mentioned, I agree. I thought the Jets really controlled the game from the beginning, and with the exception of a couple lapses, and, you know, Iggy tied it up with a nice goal with a screenshot, which is the next goal. But, you know, it was really nice to see just Thorbs get a goal and get on the board there.
Let's play that Jerome again, the goal. It came at the 9:19 mark of the first period. His fifth of the year, assist to Gabriel Landeskog. Here's how Jerome Iginla tied the game in the first period.
Intercepted by Landeskog. Near side of center for Iginla. Across the line, shoots, and scores! Jerome Iginla with a rocket to the far side, using the D-man as a screen, and we're tied at 1.
What'd you see on that goal there, Ezzy?
Right after that goal was scored, I looked over at Richie in the press box, and I said, that's a goal scorer that scored 500-plus goals in the NHL. I mean, that was such a smart goal, in my opinion. He uses Stewart perfectly as a screen. He knows exactly where he wants to put the puck. It wasn't the hardest shot. I mean, it was a hard enough shot.
Yeah.
But I thought it was a really clever goal. It kind of looked like one of those goals that maybe Hutchinson should have had. Maybe it was deflected off of Stewart. But to me, that was a goal scorer's goal.
Do you want to see Mark Stewart challenge Jerome Iginla on that play as opposed to backing in as far as he did?
Yeah, when you watch the goal the fourth, fifth, sixth time, Drew, maybe you think that because Iginla's not going to beat you wide. But at the end of the day, I do agree with Ezzy here. Give credit to a goal scorer. He's got a good wrist shot, good release, puts the puck through Stewart as a screen and in the right spot there. It goes glove side, too. So yeah, Stewart, I thought, played solid hockey. Sure, maybe a step or two because he knows that Iginla can't beat him wide, but I don't have too much of a problem with it.
The Jets regained the lead about 3 minutes later. It comes at the 12:29 mark of the first period. This is the goal that at first wasn't. Had to be confirmed via video review. Brian Little gets his first of the night, his ninth of the year. Assist to Blake Wheeler and Andrew Ladd. Here's how that goal sounded.
Wheeler's there, trying to dig it out as some skates and does. Comes out in front, played it there for Little, a shot, and it's stopped by Varlamov's glove. How about that?
Brian Little looking over at the referee says, take a look if that glove save was made across the goal line or not.
Following video review, it has been determined that the goaltender's glove was behind the line. We have a good goal.
It's the goal on video review. It shows that Semyon Varlamov's save, which was great, wasn't quite good enough as he caught it and the puck went into the net in his glove. Jets get a 2-1 lead. What'd you see on that goal there, Richard?
It's a nice pass by Blake Wheeler to Brian Little, who changed the angle and got off a nice shot, and Varlamov was out of the net. Tyson Barrie knows that pass is coming. He's got to be able to stop that pass or at least take Little away from the play. And I know Little was a little bit farther back, but then Barrie is, if he doesn't block that pass, he's in no man's land. That's the problem with this team. This Colorado team is not very good defensively. And the Jets took advantage of it. Wheeler's very good passer, good vision, and Brian Little was terrific last night.
Yeah, Blake Wheeler with 3 assists last night. Andrew Ladd, I believe, had a goal and 2 assists as well. And then Brian Little had a 4-point night, getting the hat trick, of course, which we'll talk about, and an assist as well. Ezzy, what did you see on that third goal?
Well, even though Semyon Varlamov didn't make that save, it was incredible athleticism on his part to even catch that puck, right? But you're talking, you know, back to the line here. They combined for 10 points last night,
yeah.
The Ladd-Little-Wheeler line. And I thought that was arguably their best game of the year. And they've had trouble putting together 2 or 3 game stretches. They're the top players on this team offensively, obviously. But I thought that line was really dominant. And, you know, to echo what Richie said, Eric Johnson and Jan Haida, that top pairing, didn't look good. And then you go down the list, and you had Carl Stollery, a guy who's a career AHLer. And I thought Zach Redmond looked like probably the best defenseman out there last night.
Izzy, I mean, the Colorado Avalanche came into that game last night against a division rival and played Nick Holden, a defenseman, on the second line left wing. If that doesn't speak to roster depth and confidence in the players you have, I don't know what does. And that was, and they swapped out of that. What happened was they moved Ryan O'Reilly back up to that second line in this, for the second and third period. So there, Patrick Waugh is trying anything right now to make this team work. And last night he was using a lot of motivational tools, I think, for the long haul here. But you can't score with McKinnon, Deshane, Landeskog, who I didn't think looked very good, Aginla, who was really solid last night. You can't score if you can't get the puck to the players who need to score. And that's what's happening there. That's the problem.
Starts on the back end. They can't get the puck out of their zone. Ezzy, you made a note. You were talking to Patrick Waugh after the game in the Avs dressing room, and he didn't play Nathan McKinnon for pretty much after the Jets' fifth goal, I believe, of the game.
Yeah, Richie made that observation to me up in the press box last night, and you could tell, especially on the power play, you're thinking, okay, well, maybe Patrick Waugh is just benching McKinnon for a couple shifts. He was. We'll get to the fourth and fifth goals that the Jets scored. He was on the ice for both of those goals, and that's after that he didn't play much. But, you know, Nathan McKinnon, I actually thought, had a decent game before that, and then he was struggling. But you're talking about a Colorado Avalanche team that's running around in their own zone. You know, Richie mentioned that Nick Holden, normally a defenseman, is playing forward. You've got a lot of injuries. I think they're at 9 injured players right now, especially on the back end with Brad Stewart and Ryan Wilson, two veteran guys. Brad Stewart, of course, coming over from San Jose. But you're talking about a team that is really kind of trying to figure out how to play right now as a group. And, you know, Daniel Briere did not look good. And you saw the third line, Max Talbot and Briere getting out there for the power play. This is a team right now that has all types of problems. And I think and everybody wants to talk about Semyon Varlamov and how, you know, he's not playing as well as he was last year. I agree with that. But they have a lot more problems than just goaltending.
The Jets were able to make it a two-goal game. It came at the 19:15 mark of the second period. A definite backbreaker here. It was 2-1 up to this point. The Jets had been dominating, but when it's a one-goal game, anything can happen. Andrew Ladd tips the shot from Ben Sherratt. Brian Little gets the secondary assist. Here's how that goal sounded.
Jets win the draw. Sherratt at the point. Let's a wrist shot. Go to Puckett in front. They score! Andrew Ladd makes it 3-1. A face-off win by the Jets. A wrist shot by Sherratt. Ladd hustled toward the front of the net and redirected and passed Varlamov.
You know, this is a play that starts with winning the faceoff, but it goes back to before then. The Avs with an unnecessary icing, when they clear the puck out of their zone, there's not a ton of pressure on them. They clear it out, it goes all the way down the ice for the icing, and the Jets come back, win the faceoff, and the puck ends up in the back of the net.
Jets come back with their top line.
Sure.
Against Colorado's third line for that shift there. And the top line for the Jets was drawing the McKinnon line at all times before then, so that's an opportunity to get them out against another line and a little bit of tired, right? And that's exactly what happened. Brian Little, what he needs to do there is win the draw. He wins the draw. Sherratt gets the puck, walks the line. Him and Bufflin are in the midst of swishing, and Sherratt sees an opportunity to get the puck through, which is so important in this day and age with all the shot blocking. Gets it through, and Andrew Ladd, who's scored some really nice goals in terms of, you know, tipping the puck in, he's able to cash that one in, and that was really the end of it there.
Ezzy?
Well, you know, it was a beautiful tip by Andrew Ladd, Richie. Mm-hmm. It really was. And that's where he gets his goals. That's his wheelhouse, if you will, right? You know, just on the topic of Ben Sherratt, though, a lot of concerns for me going into that game, even though the Avalanche are coming back on the second game of a back-to-back. But you've got Ben Sherratt and Dustin Byfuglien going up against the McKinnon line, right?
No, against the Duchesne line.
Duchesne line. And they did a pretty good job. But Ben Sherratt's game, I think he's had a couple of good games here. And he's not really known. He's more of a defenseman. He's not a guy that's racked up tons of points for the Ice Caps. I mean, he's done all right, but the guy has been very solid. I got to give him credit. And he was solid in rookie camp, and he's been solid for the Ice Caps over the last couple of years. But that's just a good shot in the net, and, you know, it was a nice goal.
Jets fans will no longer need to talk about Eric Bolton ever again. Brian Little obviously gets the hat trick with the two goals early in the third period. You know, just one of those, you know, nice to see a player like Brian Little get rewarded at that point in time.
Yeah, always a hard worker, you know, comes to play, doesn't miss any games, and old reliable there. So nice to see him be the guy who scores the first hat trick as opposed to somebody like Astropov scoring the first goal.
It almost looked like Brian Little didn't know he scored when he got the hat trick.
He didn't. It came in and out so quickly. He wasn't sure if it hit the crossbar or you know, hit a post and came back
out. He was surprised that the Jets 2.0 were getting a hat trick.
Yeah, exactly. Everybody was surprised by that. As we go to break, let's hear the montage of Brian Little's three goals. These are the Jets' first hat trick since they returned to Winnipeg from Atlanta. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. After the montage, when we come back, Dan Wood, Anaheim Ducks radio analyst.
Comes out in front, played it there for Little, a shot, and it's stopped by Varlamov's glove. How about that?
Brian Little looking over at the referee, says, take a look if that glove save was made across the goal line or not.
Following video review, it has been determined that the goaltender's glove was behind the line. We have a good goal.
He'll hunt the puck down. Will Blake on the far side. He put it out in front of shot. They score! Brian Little with his second of the night. Third point. And it all happened with Wheeler knocking down a pass at the point. Dumping it in. Going, getting the puck in the corner. And finding Little, who wasted no time. 45 seconds in. It's 4-1 Winnipeg. Wheeler hunts down a puck again. Comes out in front of the wraparound. And it's stopped by Varlamov. It's squeezed out in front of shot. They score! Brian Little with a hat trick.
The first hat trick of the Winnipeg Jets since coming here from Atlanta. And yes, here come the hats from the stands.
Oh, my old man's a dustman, and he wears a dustman's cap. But tonight, the chapeau belongs to Brian Little. His first hat trick as a Jet, and the first since the team relocated. It's 5-1 Winnipeg.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live at St. Vitale Center in support of Toy Mountain and the Salvation Army here in Winnipeg. Come by, drop off a new unused unwrapped toy. There's a lot of awesome opportunities for you to get entered into various draws. Come see us here at St. Vitale Center in the food hall. Meanwhile, you can follow Illegal Curve on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He's the Anaheim Ducks radio analyst, Dan Wood. Dan, good afternoon, and thanks for joining us.
Anytime. Good afternoon to you.
First of all, Dan, we want to start with what happened last night in Minnesota, in St. Paul, where Corey Perry was injured in the game, left the game, didn't return to the game. Are you expecting that it was a minor injury and he'll be back and playing tomorrow for the Ducks here in Winnipeg? Or would you be surprised to see him suit up for the team tomorrow?
Well, honestly, I would be very surprised if Corey Perry were to play tomorrow against the Jets. You know, I think the hope is definitely that it's not a real serious injury. But I think we're just going to have to wait and see until he gets looked at by the medical staff, the doctors, and so forth. It didn't look good when it occurred, that's for sure. But later on, as the night wore on, I think maybe the hope got better that it isn't too bad. Having said that, no, I'd be stunned if we see him tomorrow.
Certainly hope that he's okay there, Dan. And you look at this Ducks team this year, and the biggest change to the roster is the addition of Ryan Kesler. How has he fared? We can see the stats. We know he's put up some points, put up a couple goals last night. But how has he fared overall in his tenure in Anaheim thus far?
Well, I think everybody in Anaheim is thrilled to have Ryan Kesler. You know, the style of play that he brings is something that is very welcome for this team. You know, he's an in-your-face, intense player, and I think the Ducks could use a dose of that, and I think he's brought it, that exact thing. You know, having him to go with Ryan Getzlaff as your top two centers is something that the Ducks really needed in order to be able to compete with the other top teams in the West. So I don't think we've seen the best of Ryan Kesler until we come playoff time, but I think when that arrives, the addition of Ryan Kesler is going to be huge for the Ducks.
Dan, how has the room been? I mean, Kesler sometimes can be a polarizing figure, and he certainly always plays hard, but he can rub some people the wrong way, and you hear stories about Vancouver, and who knows if they're true or not, but how has the dressing room been thus far?
I think the guys have welcomed Ryan Kesler with open arms. You know, just because he's not necessarily the happy-go-lucky Ilya Bryzgalov type doesn't mean that he's not popular. You know, I think the guys recognize what Ryan Kesler brings. And quite honestly, I think a lot of that was overblown by the Vancouver media, which I'm sure would come as no surprise to you guys.
Dan, if at the beginning of the season you would have known that Ilya Bryzgalov was coming back to the Anaheim Ducks and John Gibson was going to be spending the majority of the AHL time in the AHL, sorry, how surprised would you have been?
Well, first off, I would have been surprised, certainly, if Ilya Bryzgalov were coming back to Anaheim, no doubt about that. Not stunned, though, because I think when the Ducks went into this season with John Gibson and Frederik Andersen as the goaltenders, certainly there was a thought that, you know, if it proved out that they weren't ready to carry the ball, the Ducks might add a veteran goaltender. I wouldn't have expected it would be Ilya Bryzgalov, but, you know, it makes sense in that regard. It hasn't been because Andersen and Gibson haven't been able to play well. It's been because of injury that they've needed another goaltender. The thought, though, guys, that John Gibson is destined to spend the rest of the season in the American League, that couldn't be farther from the truth. No decisions have been made with regard to that. First of all, the Ducks have not signed Ilya Bryzgalov. He's going to have to prove that he can get in shape and he can stop pucks, and he's going to have to earn a contract. You know, I would expect that to happen, but it's not a given. And then even if he does, I think it's going to depend on how John Gibson recovers from the groin injury, how he plays, how Bryzgalov plays. Certainly it's possible Gibson can go to Norfolk because he doesn't have to clear waivers to go down. And I'm sure he will go down initially to play himself back into shape. But to think that he's going to be there for an extended period, you know, that's putting the cart way before the horse.
And as you mentioned, Dan, John Gibson still hasn't played yet. He's still injured.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, the hope is that he'll be back ready to play sometime this month. And, again, I think he'll go down to Norfolk on a conditioning stint, you know, but that might just last a couple games, a couple weeks, whatever. We'll see.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. We're live at St. Vitale Center Food Hall in support of Toy Mountain and the Salvation Army. Our guest is Dan Wood, Anaheim Ducks radio analyst. The Ducks and the Jets tomorrow afternoon, 2 p.m. at MTS Center.
Dan, you know, lots of people know about Corey Perry, Getzlaff, and Ryan Kesler, and a name that's produced a lot of goals this year, but a player I really like is Matt Beleski, a guy who can get in on the forecheck, isn't afraid to be physical. What's been going right for him this year?
Well, Matt Beleski has a real nice combination of abilities. You're right. He can play a physical style, and he has a tremendous shot. The thing with Matt Beleski in the past is I think consistency has been an issue. There have been times when he's played with Getzlaff and Perry on the top line and looked really good for, you know, two or three games and then not so much. And I think what's happened this year is he's really taken his game to a new level in terms of being consistent. You know, he has a great shot, and when he gets opportunities, as we've seen this year, you know, he's going to score. So I think Matt Beleski is coming into his own as a hockey player. The other factor is he's been healthy, knock on wood. You know, a year ago, he was playing very well late in the season, even though he was nursing an injury. And then, obviously, in the series against the Kings, he got knocked out and was done for the year. And, he, you know, I think he's really just carried over how well he was playing late last season into this year. And it's been a godsend for the Ducks because they haven't had as much secondary scoring as they had last season.
Dan, the Anaheim Ducks went out a couple weeks ago and acquired Rene Bork from the Montreal Canadiens. How has he fit in with the Ducks organization and the Ducks team so far?
Well, I think that's still an ongoing process. I think, you know, they're looking to figure out where Rene Bork fits best. Last night, Bruce Boudreau started him on the top line with Getzlaff and Perry. Everything started being juggled after Corey Perry went down, so Bork didn't really get the opportunity to play there for an extended period of time with Getzlaff and Perry. But they've moved him around. They've tried to figure out, you know, where best he fits, and I think the jury's still out on that.
Dan, we got to ask you about a player whose last name is very familiar around these parts. Josh Manson, who, of course, his dad played for the Winnipeg Jets. He's now a coach with the Prince Albert Raiders. Is there a chance that Josh Manson's going to stick with the Ducks for the rest of the year?
Well, there's definitely a chance because the idea that the Ducks will have a fully healthy blue line core seems pretty far-fetched right now. Mm-hmm. I mean, if everyone were healthy, I would think Josh Manson would go back to Norfolk. But right now, The Ducks are missing, Francois Beauchemin. They're missing Ben Lovejoy. They're missing Eric Brewer. So by the time those guys get back, who knows who else might be dinged up. But Josh Manson has been tremendous. I mean, he's had a couple of tough nights, as you would expect with any rookie defenseman. But given the amount of minutes that he's been called on to play and the key situations he's been thrust into, he has surprised everyone. For a guy who's a sixth-round draft pick and was playing college hockey up until late last season, no one could have expected that he would come this quickly and do as well as he has in the NHL. So that's one silver lining for the Ducks through all these injuries, is the fact that they know now what they have in Josh Manson. And if they need him, later in the season, playoff time, whatever, I think they can reach out to Josh Manson with a full load of confidence.
And Dan, it's been interesting to watch kind of the transformation of the team on the back end there. The guys like Brian Allen, who they traded out, and just a little bit of guys who maybe play a little bit of a slower game. And you look at the core, to me, the core three young players that the Ducks have, and Sammy Vatanen, and Hampus Lindholm, and Cam Fowler, all guys who can skate and can move the puck and are really young and talented. What does the team foresee for those three guys moving forward here?
Well, I would have to believe that those are the three the Ducks are building around on the blue line. Hampus Lindholm, for a 20-year-old in his second season, when often NHL defensemen take a step back, he just hasn't. I mean, he's been tremendous. And it's really noteworthy that when a new guy comes in, Bruce Boudreau usually pairs him with Hampus Lindholm. That's something that you expect from a veteran defenseman, to try to help others along. And Hampus Lindholm has become that guy for the Ducks. This is a guy who, maybe isn't going to become a Hall of Fame defenseman, but I think he's going to be a really standout NHL defenseman for a lot of years. Sammy Vatanen has stepped up offensively this season. He brings an element that you just don't see that often. The other night, he beat four defenders and wound up scoring a tying goal. I saw him do that in the World Juniors when he was playing for Finland, and I thought, that's all well and good, but that's not going to work at the NHL level. But he makes it work, at least on occasion. So, he's been great, and Cam Fowler, who's developed over the past couple of seasons into a really solid defenseman, those guys are who the Ducks are building around on the blue line.
Dan, we'll let you go on this last question. We know that for the Ducks, the regular season is sort of just a tune-up. It's a warm-up for the playoffs, where they've been so close to getting to the upper echelon and getting over to the Western Conference Finals or winning the West. Is this team built right now, the way they're currently constructed, are they built that this is finally going to be the year where they can overtake the Kings or the Blackhawks and represent the West in the Stanley Cup?
Well, that's a million-dollar question. I mean, that's what they're shooting for, and you're right. I don't think the Ducks are interested in, winning a President's Trophy or even necessarily winning a division. I mean, sure, if those things happen, that's great. But the entire focus is on how are they going to play come playoff time. And if you're in the Pacific Division, you pretty much know you're going to have to go through the Kings to get to the Western Conference Final. That is no easy task. That's why the Ducks acquired Ryan Kesler, because they felt like they had to have another solid center to compete with the Kings centers. And I think now, and let's not overlook the addition of Nate Thompson. He has been a tremendous addition to this team. Does a lot of the dirty work. I think at center now, the Ducks can match the Kings. The questions, though, they still don't have a Drew Doughty, and they still don't have a Jonathan Quick. Now, maybe Hampus Lindholm becomes Drew Doughty down the road. Maybe John Gibson or Frederick Anderson can match Jonathan Quick down the road. Right now, though, you'd have to say the Kings have the edge in those two areas. What the Ducks might do before the trade deadline, we'll see. But the entire season will be measured on whether the Ducks can get past the Kings come playoff time.
They first have to get past the Jets tomorrow afternoon at MTS Center, a 2 o'clock puck drop. Dan Wood is the Anaheim Ducks radio analyst. Dan, appreciate it. Thanks very much.
Anytime, guys. Thanks for having me.
We'll see you tomorrow. Thanks very much, Dan. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll talk more about the Jets and the Ducks. You're listening to TSN 1290. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show is live at Toy Mountain at St. Vitale Center Food Hall in support of the Salvation Army.
You're listening to
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Live at St. Vitale Center Food Hall in support of Toy Mountain and the Salvation Army, we welcome you back to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment of the program is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, the official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey, conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall. Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat in their full-service restaurant. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com.
I realize, like, Remus isn't on air here and he has a day off, but, you know, Remus comes by when we're off air during the break, and he's shopping. He's buying a Seattle Mariners hat. Does he really need another Seattle Mariners hat?
Never mind that. It's Toy Mountain. Everybody else is coming by. They're dropping off new unwrapped toys, you know, getting into the Christmas spirit. Remus is buying himself a gift. Where's the Christmas spirit there?
It's very selfish.
It's very selfish. What do you think?
Well, I think, first off, you know, our friends Aaron and Julie came by.
Yeah, they brought a gift. Aaron and Julie brought a gift.
Dropped off a toy, and then you have Remus pop up, and he buys a Mariners hat. And I swear to you, Remus has 7 to 8 Mariners hats. I'm not exaggerating. And I open the hat. I've seen that hat 100 times. And he's like, I'm like, are you going to donate that? He's like, no, that's for me.
Reem, put that on Toy Mountain. Come on, let's go.
Yeah, we're going to shame you. We're publicly shaming you in front of a mall full of people, and you don't seem the least bit fazed, I got to say. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Anyways, welcome back. We're going to talk about the Jets and the Ducks tomorrow afternoon at MTS Center. Ezzy and I will be on air at 11 a.m.
That's early.
Yeah, I know. We'll have to make sure that you're up nice and early. We're hosting Hustler and Lawless as Gary and Andrew are still away, so you can join Ezzy and I tomorrow at 11 a.m. You know, Going back two weeks ago, you looked at the Jets' next 5 games, and you said they had to get at least 8 out of 10 points. They were playing Edmonton and Colorado, and they were playing Columbus and Buffalo, and then they're playing the Bruins. And had they lost to the Bruins, you would have said, okay, you know, reasonable to lose to Boston. They end up getting a point. So the last 5 games, 9 out of 10 points. Really well done. Mm-hmm. You got a big boy game tomorrow against the Anaheim Ducks. And last time you had a couple big boy games against the Blues and the Red Wings, they lost. Mm-hmm. Both of those games on home ice.
In the games, but they lost.
The only big boy game that they've won this year is that 1-0 win in Chicago on that second half of that back-to-back on that Sunday, a month or 6 weeks ago. Tomorrow against the Ducks, what's the key for the Jets there? Especially against the Ducks team, by the sounds of it, that'll be without Corey Perry.
Yeah, Drew, you're gonna, you know, you're missing your best scoring winger if you're Anaheim, so that's a huge loss for them. But we just talked to Dan Wood about it. It's up the middle, and you're gonna be matching up Kessler and Getzlaff against, you know, Little and Perreault here, and Perreault, former Duck, so there'd be something on the, I'm sure there'll be something on the board there for him in the Jets dressing room. That's the key to me, and I think you talk about matchups in the Little line last night, matchup against the MacKinnon line. Not only did they shut them down defensively, but they outperformed them by a large margin offensively. How they fare against the Anaheim team and Getzlaff specifically, because I'm assuming that's going to be the matchup. It'll be the Trouba-Stewart pairing and the Little line against Getzlaff all night. So certainly not having Perry is going to be a huge loss. But the way Anaheim plays is so different than the way Colorado plays. First off, Anaheim can get the puck out of their own zone. But when they also get the puck through the neutral zone, they get that puck down low, and they will work you over. So they may not score every time, but they're going to tire you down. And for example, in a series, it would really wear you down. So how the Jets are able to play defensively in their own zone and handle the cycle and the size of the Ducks is one of the keys.
As we'll talk about the Jets' defense and how banged up they are, you know, in terms of sort of on the macro level a little bit later on in the show, but in the micro level on a one-game basis tomorrow against the Ducks, when Richie mentioned they work you down low so well, how important is the Jets sort of withstanding that going to be as a key to the game in your mind?
It's tough, Drew, because you're talking, you know, when you talk about these teams, the Anaheim Ducks, and we asked Dan what about that, the Anaheim Ducks, the LA Kings, the St. Louis Blues, you mentioned even to a lesser degree, the Detroit Red Wings, who I'd say are more of a skill team. But you're going up against players that are really, you talk about Dustin Byfuglien is a tough player to move off the puck, but the Anaheim Ducks are big and skilled, and they can come at you with multiple lines. And sure, they have some injuries with Corey Perry, and Emerson Edom's got the mumps, which it seems like every player in the NHL has the mumps, but you've got a lot of talented players there, and a guy like Kyle Palmieri, I really like. He hasn't played much this year, but he he's a good player, and there's a lot of talent. But, you know, you talk about the size. A guy like Ryan Getzlaff, I think, illustrates that the most. And Matt Bileski has been really good. He's a big guy, tough guy to move off the puck as well. But this is a fast team, a big team. And to me, you know, if the Jets want to win this game, and they can win it, it's a winnable game. And we've seen the Jets beat the Ducks before over the years. It's going to take a really good effort. And, you know, there's no reason to believe that if they play this way. But you're talking about, again, Richie, going back to Ben Chiarot and Dustin Byfuglien going up against the Matt Duchene line. Now there's a good chance that you know, you're going to have a much tougher task against the Ducks.
So how do you see the Jets deploying their defense against the best lines of the Ducks?
I mean, it's going to be Byfuglien and Chiarot against the Kessler line, and it's going to be Trouba and Stewart against the Getzlaff line. I think that's for sure. I think you're going to see Little, Wheeler, and Ladd up against the Getzlaff line, and you're going to see the Perreault line likely up against the Kessler line. So I think that gets to another point. You talk about Colorado last night, really nothing on the back on the bottom six. Anaheim not like that. Cogliano, Smith-Pelly, Soderberg, skill, speed, combinations of size as well.
Sure.
You know, guys, Nate Thompson, who Dan Wood mentioned, excellent penalty killer. He dropped the gloves last night and took Keith Ballard to town for injuring Corey Perry. So
a clean hit, though.
Yeah, but I like the fact he sticks up for
his
teammate.
But clean hit.
And he stuck up for him, all right, if you saw that fight. Whew. But the idea is you're dealing with depth, and as you, that gets back to the Jets' depth, right? Last night they were able to kind of play a top-six game. Now they could roll their lines, but the idea is Colorado really only had those six guys who were effective, and they tried to put a defenseman up forward to spread it out, and that didn't work. So with Anaheim, now the question is how does Scheifele, had Lowry, Halashuk, how do those guys match up against Cogliano and those kind of players? And then Thompson and against the guys like that Winnipeg has on their fourth line, because you may not have the opportunities to play those depth guys as much. So it's a bigger test. This team is a lot better. They're deeper. They're more physical. They're more disciplined. Like, everything about Anaheim is better than Colorado. So it's going to be the Jets are going to have to raise their play. And you hope, as a Jets fan, if you're a Jets fan, that the Jets haven't kind of, they've played Boston, granted, but the idea they haven't kind of lowered the way they're playing more poorly because they're playing against teams that just aren't as good. So you're able to get away with more.
The Jets have to step up their game because they're stepping up in a talent level in their opponents.
They're stepping up not only a talent level, they're stepping up on every level.
Sure.
You can get away with things, and especially it's the defense of Anaheim, too. And then you talked about Dan Wood talked about the injuries, but you're still playing against Fowler and Lindholm and these guys. Whereas last night, I mean, you didn't play against that. Edmonton, you didn't play against that. Buffalo, you didn't play against that. Columbus, you didn't play against that either. And Boston, you did, but without Chara. So, big test here.
All of those reasons you just named, Richie, is why I picked the Ducks to go to the Stanley Cup Final when we did our season preview show. And, you know, it's early here. It's only about 30 games into the season. But you talk about the injuries they have, and Ben Lovejoy and Francois Beauchemin, who obviously had the illness when he was out with Corey Perry there. And then you have a guy like Josh Manson, of course, we mentioned, you know, son of Dave Manson, stepping in. And, you know, I know, Richie, you like Lindholm and Vatanen, and they're good defensemen.
I do.
And that speaks to the depth. And that's what you're talking about here. When you're talking about the Anaheim Ducks, a team that's had the regular season success, and now they want to knock the Kings off of the throne, right? And so it's going to be a tough game. It's going to be a nice game for fans as well, because previous years when the Ducks came into the MTS Center, it was all about Tamu, right?
Right.
But this is just against the best team in the Western Conference right now. And can you, how do you match up? And again, I think the Jets, they'll skate with the Ducks. They'll be in it. I don't think the Ducks are going to come in here and blow out the Winnipeg Jets.
Right.
But
I agree.
But this I think is the best team in the league right now.
Maybe, Ezzy. But and I think another thing is, Anaheim is going to play a physical style, and the Jets have become more physical under Paul Maurice. That is one of their characteristics as a team now.
Yeah.
You see
Dustin Byfuglien and the fact that he's running havoc on teams across the league, right?
Absolutely, and he's playing within himself. We'll talk more about that. But to Ezzy's point, the Jets will skate with them, and I don't think the Jets will be pushed around physically. But will they be taken advantage of skill-wise?
Yeah, they got to stay out of the penalty box. Yeah, they've done a decent job, not so much last night, but
in general, it's been a problem. I mean, they've drawn penalties as well, but their power play isn't very good. So,
Let's go to break. When we come back, we'll talk about the Jets defense now that they've had their injury woes. And then still to come in the show, we're going to talk about the Jets power play, deep dive into the Jets power play. Richie, you wrote a great article on illegalcurve.com.
It was okay.
Okay, as he only says it was okay. I say it was great. You'll remember where it was.
It was all right. I'd give it a C+.
C+ from Ezzy. You know, I gave it a solid B, maybe even an A-. But in any event, we'll talk about that as well. Also to come on the show, Dave Jamieson from TSN 1260 in Edmonton to talk about the Gong Show that the Edmonton Oilers are.
Yeah.
And Brian Engblom in the last hour to talk about Jean Beliveau and a little bit about the Jets as well. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live at St. Vitale Center in the food hall for the Toy Mountain in support of the Salvation Army on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to St. Vitale Center Food Hall. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here for Toy Mountain in support of the Salvation Army. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com. As you gentlemen both know, the Winnipeg Jets got a lot of bad news on the blue line front earlier this week with the announcement that Zach Bogosian is out 4 to 6 weeks with a quote-unquote lower body injury.
That's a foot.
It's a foot. I mean, we all saw him block the shot against Edmonton. It seemed pretty logical that it was a foot injury of some sort. Toby Enstrom, we knew he had been out. He's now going to be out for the remainder of the month. Mm-hmm. Not 100% sure what that injury actually is. And Grant Klitsam is going to be out for the next couple of weeks. How do you think the Jets are going to be able to... Obviously, Dustin Byfuglien moved back to defense. You can see how excited he was playing defense again last night. That's his preferred position. How do you think they're going to be able to handle the next month to 6 weeks of real serious injuries on their blue line?
It's going to be tough, Drew. For many reasons, and I, you know, one of which is that Mark Stewart's essentially going to be your top pairing left side guy. You know, he's doing an admirable job for sure. And Jacob Trouba to me is taking steps forward. That, I mean, right now I think he's a top 20 defenseman in the league. I really do. I think he's been that good. And so him playing a lot is not going to be a bad thing. Young guy can log a lot of minutes. He's a horse. But you don't
need a human.
it's you know Ben Chiarot. I didn't kind of see in the past couple of games here, you know, he plays a simple game, and will he be challenged against some of the more talented, faster teams? Like, that's very possible. And I don't think we can judge that just yet. And then you got Dustin Byfuglien, who I thought really played within himself last night, took chances up the ice when they were there, but didn't really rush too often in the offensive zone. When he did, the Jets forwards were aware that he was going to rush. Mark Scheifele rotated back for him, and there were times where, you know, he's playing more within himself and that he sees the opportunity to go up the ice but doesn't always take it, and that's a maturation of his game. Now, that's one game, and that's one game against the Colorado Avalanche, who, you know, are not the Chicago Blackhawks, but that's a positive sign. And I think another factor there is Dustin Byfuglien wants to play deep, so he sees this as a month-long opportunity to prove himself and maybe get pushed back there. And so we don't know if that'll happen or not. So there are those factors that play. But having said all that, and the possibilities of this turning out maybe not as bad as some think, you still have matchup problems. And Trouba has done a tremendous job. Trouba and Stewart have done a tremendous job shutting a lot of the best players down. But Mark Stewart's minutes, you know, he plays hard minutes, and they were monitoring them last night. How does he fare? And the left side guys, Chiarot and Stewart and Party, I mean, you're talking about three, number five, six guys there, in my opinion. And how do they fare against the top team? So I think matchup problems are going to be very difficult for the Jets, and they're going to try and stay afloat here. I don't think they're going to they think that they're going to be continue this pace, considering the quality of competition they're going to be playing against and considering the injuries. But if they can keep it at maybe a 500 level or thereabouts, 500 equivalent in this day and age, I think they'd be pretty happy.
Tread water this month. Is that sort of the hope? Or, I mean, quietly might be that let's get through this month, let's stay in the playoff race, and we'll be glad to be there and get everybody healthy come middle of January?
Well, let's not get it twisted here. I mean, for the Jets coaching staff, this is a major concern. I mean, you've lost three of your top six defensemen. And sure, Grant Klitsam's kind of come in and out of the lineup. But you've lost three of your top six defensemen. And Richie mentions now Mark Stewart and Jacob Trouba as your number one pair. And hey, guys, first game looked pretty good against the Colorado Avalanche. And you can say what you will, you know, the second game of back-to-back. But now you're talking about playing the Ducks twice in December.
Twice in the next week.
Twice in the next week.
Trouba's been dominant, by the way.
He has been dominant, Richie, and to me there is a concern. You know, you talk about Mark Stewart, and you know, I'm a big fan of Mark Stewart, and he's done a great job. He plays a very, very physical game, and that is a concern. He's playing more minutes now, and you talk about the monitoring of minutes, but someone has to replace those
That's
minutes.
That's exactly right.
And I think Jets coaching staff, after two games here for Ben Chiarot, you got to be happy, and they've been high on him. I mean, they've wanted to get him into the lineup, and I don't mean that as in getting him in the lineup, you know, at the expense of another player. I mean, he was the first guy that they wanted to call up. You could say maybe Keaton Ellerbe, but he's injured. But
you don't want to call. He's better than Keaton Ellerbe. By I've only seen him play now in a couple of games, so that's in a small sample. But I think he's better than Keaton Ellerbe. The issue is you don't want to bring in. I mean, your preference is not to bring in Ben Chiarot and drop him into a top four role with a guy like Dustin Byfuglien, who you're not sure whether he'll play defense or not.
Right, Richie, and it turns out again, it's only been one game, and the Anaheim Ducks coming up twice at home will be the real test. Can Ben Chiarot, in his fourth and fifth NHL games, third or fourth, whatever it is, play with Dustin Byfuglien, who's now gone back to defense? Kent, how do they handle the Anaheim Ducks?
How do they handle Ryan Kessler?
Then they're going to, after tomorrow's game, they're going to go play Colorado and Dallas on the road. They're going to play two teams that are desperate for wins. They're out of the playoff picture and desperate. How do they do in that situation?
Spezza. And then again, the matchup, Sagan's line is going to be out there against you because they're going to get last change.
And again, we're not saying that these guys can't get it done, because I think it's amazing to have a versatile player like Dustin Byfuglien. Not many teams can have injury problems like that. Look at the Anaheim Ducks. What did the Anaheim Ducks have to do when Ben Lovejoy and Francois Beauchemin got injured? They had to call up a guy like Josh Manson from the AHL. So, I mean, you're talking about having the luxury, and I realize Chiarot was called up, but I mean just having Byfuglien, the ability to plug him in to a top four role, because he used to play in that role with Tobias Enstrom for the first couple of years here. Well, I guess 2.5 years. Claude Noel moved in, what was it, last January?
Yep.
But it's going to be tough here. I mean, this is a concern. And not to say the Jets can't get some wins here and you know, keep the momentum going at home, but it's going to be tough. And I worry about one more injury, and then you start to wonder.
But we haven't even talked about the fact that Byfuglien out of the top nine really hurts the top nine and the ability to score. Last night, again, they get six goals. But how is Chuck Scheifele and Lowry there, guys? It's not exactly a very intimidating third line. And if you're going to be the Jets, and we talked about this in the pregame show yesterday, the Jets are kind of a top nine scoring squad. I mean, they don't have Sagan Ben out there. I mean,
now that Thorpes is on a goal scoring streak, Richie, maybe that's going to change.
But the thing is, when you're trying to be like a top nine scoring team as opposed to a loaded up top two lines and a checking third,
three lines to connect.
Which is rare now. The issue is you take Byfuglien, and while he wasn't killing it offensively, he certainly was able to sustain some pressure and create opportunities. When you replace him with Halaschuk, who can't do that, then your third and fourth lines they're not scoring lines, and then you're creating chances, and are you creating chances at the expense of defense? So we need to see them play against really good teams to get a better read on that, but that would be my concern. It doesn't only affect you defensively, it affects you offensively, and if it affects you offensively, does the offense need to compensate for the defense? And by doing that, can they still score? It's complicated.
To that point, though,
I have no idea what you just said, Richard.
Neither do I.
That's how complicated it is. But to that point, I mean, you could see an influx of offense from the defense now with Dustin Byfuglien back there. Maybe he becomes more effective offensively as a defenseman than he had been as a forward.
But does it come at the expense of defense?
Well, that's the question that we don't know yet, and that'll be interesting.
Yesterday,
to see.
He didn't. I thought he scored his goal, which was one that Barra probably would want back, but the idea was I thought he played within himself last night.
Right.
And the question is, when he gets pressured and they're not up by a lot of goals and they're playing against a team that has a lot more than Colorado has, does he stay in that at 2-all? And if it's 2-all and he sees a quasi-opportunity to jump into the rush, and he probably shouldn't, does he stay back or does he go? And if he goes, does somebody cover for him? Does it create an odd man opportunity? Does Ben Chiarot then overcompensate because he's a young player trying to read Byfuglien and make sure he protects the defensive zone?
Ezzy, I want you to get in there, but I also want, we're going to hear from Dustin Byfuglien talking about moving back to defense coming up before we go to break in a minute or two. Just give a quick, your thought quickly on what you think Dustin Byfuglien is going to do offensively from the back end.
Well, we've seen what he can do, and you mentioned Drew earlier in the segment that Dustin Byfuglien would prefer to play defense, but hey, he has the ability once he gains speed, and we've seen him do his thing for 4 years now. He has the ability to jump into the play and wreak havoc in all facets of the game, and he can be dangerous on the power play with that big blast, and he can be dangerous on 5-on-5 situations. So I think Dustin Byfuglien can still contribute offensively, but you know, he's going to have to be a shutdown guy for this team. He's got it. First and foremost, they need him to be responsible defensively, because when you're talking about teams like the Anaheim Ducks, they can score a lot of goals.
Here's Dustin Byfuglien on moving back to defense. This is from earlier this week.
Yeah, it was kind of weird seeing a red jersey in my stall, but, you know, with the numbers and stuff, and couldn't get guys up here quick enough, so, you know, it was practice.
Do you think it'll be an option for the game tomorrow?
Never know what goes on around here.
That's Dustin Byfuglien. When we come back from break, we are going to talk about the Winnipeg Jets' power play. Richard did a deep dive article into that. We'll talk about it next. You're listening to The Illegal Curve. We're live at St. Vitale Center, Toy Mountain, in support of the Salvation Army. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
1 hour down, 2 hours to go. Welcome back to St. Vitale Center Food Hall. It is the Toy Mountain Charity Toy Drive in support of the Salvation Army. If you're in and around the St. Vitale Mall area, come on down, drop off a new unwrapped toy. Every entry, every toy donation gets you a raffle for a chance to enter into one of five prize packages. The Is It Summer Yet prize package. You get tickets to One Direction. You get tickets to 5 Seconds of Summer. The Jingle Bell Rock package. Tickets to Bryan Adams, Nickelback, the Pink Floyd Experience, and the Tragically Hip. There's the Fight Before Christmas. 4 tickets to see the WWE at MTS Center on December 20th, as well as a meet and greet for 4 with a WWE superstar. Personally, I'm hoping Ezzy wins that package and he gets body slammed by somebody. The Miracle on Sesame Street, a 4-pack of tickets to see Sesame Street live, and a meet and greet with your favorite Sesame Street friend. And of course, Mary Jetsmas, 1 full team autographed jersey, as well as 2 tickets to see the Jets take on the Buffalo Sabres later on this month. New unwrapped toys here at St. Vitale Center in the food hall. Richie, Ezzy, I am your host, Drew Mindell. We want to talk about the Winnipeg Jets power play. Richard, earlier this week, you did an article on IllegalCurve.com, which we'll tweet out right now via our Twitter feed, at IllegalCurve, talking about the Jets power play. And we're going to talk about it in detail, but sort of the long and the short of it is the Jets power play hasn't really changed at all in the last 4 years that this team has been back here in Winnipeg.
Yeah, that's really, I mean, it's not rocket science there, really, Drew. The Jets have been playing, you know, the first shift that they came back, the puck drop at MTS Center in October of 2011, the 5 guys on the ice were Blake Wheeler, Brian Little, Andrew Ladd, Tobias Enstrom, and Dustin Byfuglien. And those 5 guys have been the 5 players that both Claude Noel and Paul Maurice have relied on more than other players on the power play since the team returned. And aside from a good performance in year one, years 2, 3, and 4, you know, lockout obviously in one of those years, so a shortened season, and about 25 games into the season or so this year, a little more than that now, there's been a lack of production on the power play. And while it doesn't fall solely on the shoulders of those 5 players, those are the 5 guys who are getting the most amount of time, and the performance hasn't really changed. So you think a couple things. The first one is, well, maybe you put other players out there. Well, I'll say this. Claude Noel and Paul Maurice are around this team all the time. They want to put out the guys on the power play who they think will give them the best chance to score. So maybe there's a guy or two they could swap in or out. But at the end of the day, they know who can provide the offense for them, and they're going to the guys that they think can give them the best chance. And if those guys still aren't getting it done, then you wonder, is it something that needs to come from the outside to be able to change that? Because we've seen this story many, many times.
Before we get, Ezzy, before you get in here, here's the Jets' percentage of success on the power play over the last 3-plus seasons. 2011-12 was the best year. They had a 17.9% success rate, good for 12th overall in the NHL. Since then, it's only been diminishing returns. 2012-2013, 13.8%. That was dead last in the NHL. 2013-14, 15.4% success rate on the power play, 25th overall in the NHL. 2014-15, that's thus far this year, 12% success rate on the power play, 27th overall in the NHL. So if you look at it by average, the Winnipeg Jets, for the most part, have been in the bottom third of the NHL in success rate on the power play in the last three-plus seasons.
Right, and you know Richie talks about this in the article, and you just mentioned it. You're not surprised that out of the 10 power play goals the Jets have scored, with the exception of Paul Postma, who's got a pretty good blast when he's hitting the net, it's not surprising that the leaders are Andrew Ladd with a couple goals, Brian Little's got a couple goals, Evander Kane's got a couple goals, Enstrom's got a goal. It's not a surprise at all because those are the players that are going out there. And, you know, we've talked about it before. Well, is it formation? Is it strategy? Is it puck movement? Is it lack of luck? I mean, I think it's a combination of everything. And I think Richie ultimately is saying that, well, no, it's personnel.
And that's what I've been saying, really. That's the thing of the article. I mean, this is, again, it's not rocket science here. We've been talking about, you know, personnel being an issue here in terms of the power play. And you've asked many times, Drew, what's the problem with the power play? And this year and the end of last season, at the end of the day, it's just the personnel isn't there to have that great of a power play. So the numbers aren't really, there's no real surprise here. Again, there's nothing that came out to be. It just, you look at the figures and there hasn't been success, and they've been playing those guys, and those guys are good national, really good National Hockey League players, but on the power play, it clearly hasn't been effective enough. And, you know, Andrew Ladd is a guy out of those players who the other guys have succeeded a little bit more. Blake Wheeler, especially out of the three, his game's a little bit more well-suited to the power play. But what do you expect? Like, after a while, if you expect this power play to be, to come up to the top 15, I would ask why.
And Richie, one of the guys that was brought in the offseason that to help in faceoffs and the power play is Matthew Perreault. But as we talked about, Matthew Perreault, dating back to Washington and then the Ducks where he was last year, he's not a guy that's torn up the power play. I mean, what did we say? He had 18 or 20 career points, something like that. I mean, Matthew Perreault, and again, I'm not knocking Matthew Perreault. I'm just saying putting Matthew Perreault out there isn't going to fix everything. And it's, to me, it's I know Richie and I disagree on this a little bit. To me, I look at the guys out there, and I'm saying you've got quite a bit of skill out there, and especially when you're talking about Tobias Enstrom and Dustin Byfuglien, and obviously we don't have Tobias Enstrom right now for the Jets, but you're talking about quite a bit of skill there, and you know, you look at some of the other teams that are, you know, top power play teams in the NHL right now, and do they have significantly more firepower than the Jets to put out there? Well, maybe you could argue they do, but it's a combination of factors, and to me, you know, you can, I think, improve, and I think that's something that they want to improve, but, you know, maybe it's been better. We got to say that. I mean, the power play has been better the last four or five games here. I think they've got four goals in the last five games, as it? I'll check that, but, you know, it's something that I think it hasn't hurt them as much over the last 20 or so games, but it was really hurting them early in the season.
It hurts them as in that these tight games that go either way, you can't get any power play goals. That's a problem. But the thing is if you're the coach, you look at it from the perspective of, well, if I put this power play unit out and I think it could work or not work, you know, if I know that these five guys will get a certain amount of production, maybe I'm just okay with that as opposed to risking getting even worse. And some people may say, well, what's the difference between 25th and 30th? Well, it's still a few goals, and if the Jets are playing these one-goal games of defensive style, you need every goal you can get. So I understand the coach's perspective as well there. And it's not an easy position to be in. And, you know, for example, a guy like Jacob Trouba, I'd like to see him get more time, because why not? You know, you want to put in, I don't think you need to go wholesale, but you need, because these guys are still at a lot of talent, but maybe you throw out Jacob Trouba in there. But even if you watch last night's game, Jacob Trouba plays in the power play with Dustin Byfuglien. And then the other guys on the squad. But the fact that they're both right-handed shots changes the angles. A couple times last night, there was an opportunity to make that pass because it's two right-handed shots. So it's not that easy. The personnel needs to be suited for a power play, and I just think that the pieces that they have and the skill sets of these players, again, they're very good players, but they don't always mesh together and aren't always best for the power play. There are some guys who are just better at 5-on-5 than they are in the power play.
You know, I thought the best stat that you had in the article was where you referred to you looked at the Jets in terms of power play points per 60 minutes and how the five-man unit, the Ladd, Little, Wheeler, Byfuglien, Enstrom, how they rank compared to their NHL colleagues. And you go back to 2011-2012, from that point in time all the way through this year, only twice have any of those three forwards, Wheeler, Ladd, or Little, cracked the top 60 in power play points per 60 minutes. That's Blake Wheeler came 53rd in 2011-2012 among NHL forwards in power play points per 60 minutes. And then last year, or pardon me, 2013-14, he came 45th among power play points per 60 minutes. I just thought that
thresholds there, but the idea is they're just not in the top echelon.
That's right. They're not in the, of all the players who are getting significant power play minutes, they're not in the upper echelon in terms of production. And I understand your point about them, you know, Paul Maurice saying it's better than what might be, which might be nothing.
Right.
But at some point in time, don't you want to give everybody else, give the other guys, the other talented guys on your team, the Scheifeleys, the Canes, another opportunity?
Well, let's see. Like, is it Scheifele a guy you think could help? Yeah, possibly. Do I think Kane helps a power play? Not particularly. I don't think so, really. Scheifele, Trouba, I think those are the two guys, and Perreault probably will give you a little bit of possibly a boost. But are Scheifele or Perreault, or are we talking about, you know, look at the, as you mentioned, the top guy, top power plays. Pittsburgh, top in the National Hockey League so far. Washington, who do those two teams have?
Well, obviously,
Crosby, Ovechkin. San Jose, 3, Philly, 4, Tampa, 5. That's an awful lot of firepower there, Drew. So are these guys going to change that significantly? I do think, don't know, I am for a change there in terms of the same old isn't working, but it's not going to be a 10% or 5% increase in the power play success rate, and I don't think it's going to be working miracles because at the end of the day, these guys are practicing every day with these teams, and if the coaches thought they'd give them the best chance to win, they would probably put them out there.
I agree with you there that obviously Paul Maurice is interested in winning in the now, and he thinks that
That's right.
Is the best.
That's right.
These are the best five players to give him an opportunity to succeed on the power play. But Ezzie, from your perspective, isn't it time to maybe see some of the other talented forwards the Jets have, maybe see what they can produce, give them a little bit more power play time on a per-game basis, and see if that sparks another unit or maybe contributes to some more success on the unit as a whole?
I think so, and you're obviously not going to see Chris Thorburn and Jim Slater on the power play, but you've seen Michael Frolik. You've seen Michael Frolik for on the power play. I mean, but Richie talked about Mark Scheifele on the second power play unit. But to me, this is a collective unit here. And you know, in the article, it's mentioned that in 2011-2012, that was the year they had the best power play. And to me, that the difference was Dustin Byfuglien was scoring more. But if you look at his rank in the NHL, but I mean, this is something that it's important. The power play is important because if you're a really good team, especially a good 5-on-5 team, maybe the power play doesn't have to be, for example, in Anaheim, it doesn't necessarily have to be that good. But when you're talking about a team like the Jets, who right now is fighting for that last playoff spot in the Western Conference, that's the goal this year, is to get into the playoffs. Having a good power play can really help you and can be a game changer.
When we come back, I want to talk about if we were to drop Perreault in on the power play, if we were to drop Trouba in on the power play, and Scheifele, how do they affect the formations, and what do we think would happen if that would be the case?
Let's do that. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live at St. Vitale Center Food Hall. It's the Toy Mountain Charity Toy Drive in support of the Salvation Army. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to St. Vitale Center, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. This segment of the show is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, the longest running independent comedy club in North America. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. If you're still looking for New Year's Eve plans, check them out, rumorscomedyclub.com. Great place to laugh in the new year. If you're a little bit slacking, maybe you're in charge of organizing your office Christmas party and you haven't gotten around to it yet, call Rumors. There's not much space available, but I'm sure they'll do their best to fit you in. rumorscomedyclub.com. Before the break, Richard and Ezra, we were talking about the Jets' power play. And, Richie, you said you wanted to talk about how the alignment of the power play would look if they were to make some changes and perhaps give more power play time to guys like Mark Scheifele, Matthew Perreault, Jacob Trouba. I suppose you could probably throw Evander Kane into that lineup, into that conversation as well. So why don't we start with that, and then we'll see where this takes us.
Well, I mean, you know, if you drop Matthew Perreault onto the power play, and which they have, obviously, and he's played some. They played some yesterday. Perreault's strength is going to be kind of on the half boards and lower in the zone, being a little shifty and making passes, right? He's not going to be taking a massive slap shot. So if you're going to do that, then you're going to work through Perreault on the right side. And if you're on his off wing, and if you're going to work through Perreault on his off wing, it makes some sense to then have, you know, Bufflin or Trouba on the point there, because the big right-handed shot is available for the one-timer. But then the question is, who is in the middle? Are you putting, maybe, because if you're using the umbrella, is Brian Little in the middle and then Ladd in front and Wheeler on the weak side? Because Wheeler is not a one-timer kind of guy, and he's a passer. So are you then directing the power play through Perreault more so than through Wheeler? And is that going to lead to success? Because I think both Perreault and Wheeler on each side of the ice aren't going to be big-time shooters. So that's the, you know, so that's a Perreault thing, right? He'll help you in some ways, but he may hurt you in other ways. And if you talk about Scheifele would be on the other side, right? And he's a right-handed shot coming in. You want him to be able to shoot off of the wing, off his off wing, and also he's a passer. But if that's the case, who's playing at the top of the point for a one-timer? There's nobody on the left-handed shooting guy in the Jets who's doing that.
Is that so, the biggest deficiency in the Jets right now, is the lack of a left-handed shot on the power play?
Well, yes and no. I mean, based on the way the roster's constructed right now, yes. I mean, if you have another team with different talent and different skill sets, maybe it's not as big of an issue. But here it is, because if you're going to try and get Scheifele on the power play there on the left side, because I think that's where you want him. He's a passer, right? And he's got a good wrist shot. Well, then you have to be able to be threatening from different places, right? So who's playing in the middle in that case? Is it maybe Andrew Ladd in the high slot? And who's playing on the far side? Because you need a left-handed shot there to really be really dangerous. So the Jets don't really have enough left-handed shots to be that effective. I mean, Kane's really good with the puck. He's a good shooter, good wrist shot, but he's more of an on-the-rush kind of shooter, right? He's not a big slap shot one-timer guy. So if you're directing it through Scheifele, are the other guys as threatening? So we can talk about putting different players out there all we want, but how much of a difference will it make?
Right, and you almost are in a position, Richie, where you have to, not just because the power play hasn't been working all year, but because right now you're missing Tobias Enstrom, who's usually out there in the first power play unit. Mm-hmm. And I agree with you, Richie. And to answer your question, Drew, I think that is a major problem.
Yep.
I think we talked about that in the offseason. Really, you put a left shot defenseman in there, and with a good shot, I should say. And, you know, that's something that could dramatically change the power play. Look, I think that we've all agreed here that the power play personnel isn't going to change much. And, you know, we talked about Paul Postma. He's got he struggled. I didn't think he had a great game yesterday, and I haven't thought that he's been good of late, but I think he has been the most improved Jet. But you talk about who can, you know, add that blast from the point, it's Paul Postma. But again, you need another left shot defenseman, and if it's not left shot defenseman, are you putting a forward out there? And I mean, who's that going to be? But again, I think, you know, it comes down to me, it has to be execution. You're talking about the same old fundamentals of hockey, quick movement on the power play, and it's everything's got to be quick. And I think at times the Jets rely too much on the same old, you know, you're trying to put the round peg into the square hole. So I think the power play can definitely be better, but I definitely don't think that it's necessarily means you should be putting out a completely different unit. I think it's tweaking with what works, Richie.
And I think, you know, you talk about Bufflin and Trouba. If you're going to kind of play the umbrella, who plays at the top of the umbrella, right? Because Bufflin has got a big shot. Trouba can shoot it too, and he's been doing a nice job of not only shooting it, but getting the shots through. But Bufflin's a better passer than Trouba. And Trouba's a good passer, but Bufflin really has good vision on the ice. So if you put Bufflin lower down in the zone, maybe in the middle of a high slot, well, then you take away the ability to make plays, right? So then you probably want him on the top. And if that's the case, then maybe you have Trouba on his left side of an umbrella, and maybe Perreault on the right, and then Little in the middle, and Ladd in front, or Wheeler in front, and something like that. I could see possibly tweaking and making a change there, and they've played some of those guys, so it's not a huge change at all, if any change. And maybe that improves it a bit. But again, it's not going to be that significant. But I think there needs to be some change to see, again, not wholesale, but a change or two to some of the personnel to see if it can improve you slightly. Because the Jets, looks like they're going to be in competition for that spot all year. But
that playoff spot,
yeah,
you're saying.
Power play goal or two or three, say five power play goals.
It's huge.
It's a huge difference for them, yep, getting those points. So a wholesale change, Drew, I think may really hurt them. I think that's what Paul Maurice is worried about. But a tweak or two may give them a little bit of a boost. And external improvements would help a lot, but how are you going to do that? Who are you going to give up, and what are you going to get?
Well, let's talk about external improvements, because, you know, the coaches can only coach the players that are provided to them by the front office and by the general manager. The power play, as we've documented, has been an issue for a number of years now, and there's never been any sort of acquisitions made by the Jets to go out and try and get somebody who's, you know, specifically best suited to help with the power play.
Sure. Well, I think I think Matthew Perreault, that was factored in. I think you, that's not.
But you yourself said he doesn't have a. I mean, it's a nice idea on paper that he'd help with the power play, but he doesn't have any history of overwhelming success on the power play.
No, he doesn't. But I think to say that they didn't try to address it with an acquisition is somewhat false, because I think he was acquired, A, to replace Olli Jokinen. I mean, third line center.
Mission accomplished.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Check that one off the list.
Exactly.
But I know what you're saying as far as he isn't Sidney Crosby. Well, and you're not going to acquire Sidney Crosby, but I'm just saying, we're saying he isn't the best power play. He's not the best power play player in the NHL. But I think to say that Chevy didn't think, okay, well, Matthew Perreault, he can help our power play, it's not that good, I think is a little bit false. But it hasn't worked, and unfortunately, I think Matthew Perreault has
It's almost hard to say if it has or hasn't worked. He hasn't really been given that much opportunity to see if it's going
to
work.
He's
got
to be one of those players that is given more opportunity, I think.
You know, back to you here, Richard, on that same question. You know, what point in time should Kevin Cheveldayoff be going out to look for a guy who, you know, I'm not saying mortgage the future to get a guy who can help you on their power play, because that's short-sighted, but a guy who can, you know, one of his better attributes is that's a solid power play player who can come in and help our team, or he can add that left-handed shot from the point that we need on the back end that we haven't been able to get so far. Toby Enstrom is, you know, we know what his limitations are on that left side of the power play point.
Yeah, I think it's something to explore, Drew, and I think you look at specific talent, as you're mentioning, in terms of maybe being able to provide a different look on the squad. And that's even two units, too, by the way. You might want to keep Enstrom on unit one with a different kind of a change or two there. And you may want to have another guy in the second unit to give you that flexibility, because Stewart and Party, right, aren't going to play Sherrod. They aren't going to play those roles. So it doesn't mean a guy needs to come in to replace Enstrom as much as he can complement Enstrom and complement, you know, the second unit, or it could be the first unit, and you have Enstrom on the second unit. It's that flexibility and the options, because when you're defending against a power play, you want to make sure you have as many options as possible, because then the other team can't cheat, right? That's the goal. So I think when you look at the teams that are struggling, Drew, in the next, you know, month or so, you're going to see teams that are clearly out of it. And when they're clearly out of it, they're going to be willing to trade guys. And For the Jets, I think that you don't need it. You need more of a specialty guy. And I'm not here coming here with a list of 10 guys the Jets need to acquire. But, you know, a guy like Jordan Leopold goes for a late round pick. That's more to, you know, move the puck, and he's not the most physical guy, but he has some offensive skills. So is he going to be the tonic here? No. But a guy like that, where you can get him for pretty cheap, I don't have an issue with the Jets trading lower round picks for guys who are expiring contracts who can help them right now if they're going to have a playoff shot. It's, you know, I don't think the Jets are going to be trading any first or second round picks, maybe a third, but the fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh picks, guys. I mean, those rarely turn out anyways.
If you can trade a fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh round pick, like you just said, Ezzie, and you acquire a guy who can boost your power play from, say, 27th or, you know, whatever it is right now, all the way up to, like, 23rd, 22nd, I mean, it's not a huge jump, but it certainly is some goals, and those might be the goals that are the difference between making the playoffs and missing the playoffs.
In the meantime, though, you have to play to your strengths. And right now, the Jets, especially on the power play, and especially with Tobias Enstrom out of the lineup, you got to get the goals from the dirty places if you need to do that. So you're talking about, you know, we talked about Andrew Ladd and Blake Wheeler, Brian Little to a lesser degree because he's a smaller guy and he doesn't go in front of the net. We're talking about Blake Wheeler and Andrew Ladd having to tip point shots. So if Ben Chiarot's out there, or it doesn't matter if Paul Post was out there, if it's Buff from the point, or Buff has to go in front of the net, you got to do what you got to do to get goals on the power play, because you want it to be something that creates energy in games.
One guy I think, you know, could be of interest, but Jets certainly won't be the only team interested in him, is Sequeira in Carolina. Andre Sequeira, the guy who can move the puck out of his own zone. It's a left-handed shot. A guy, that type of player. I don't know enough about his shooting ability to speak to that, but the idea of that kind of player, a guy of expiring contract who you would hope wouldn't cost too much depending on who's going to be competing for him, not the best defensive player, but certainly a guy who can get the puck out of his own zone. So that's the kind of guy. Expiring contract, not going to cost you too much, you don't think, and can be an offensive player. So that's the type that you're looking at. The question is it better to strike early if you're going to strike, or wait?
Well, I was going to say,
also the question is, do you want to rent a player?
Well, I don't think if the
depending on the
compensation
cost, right?
Isn't too much. If it's a fourth round pick, you don't mind
renting
it. You're
not going to get him for a fourth round
pick. I know you're not.
If
it doesn't cost you too much, you don't mind renting
it. Good defenseman. You had 40 plus points last year.
Yeah. There's also no rule that says you have to wait till the trade deadline to improve your team. You can improve your team in December and get more bang for your buck than if you wait till the trade deadline to do it. Anyways, let's take a break and we'll talk about an organization that doesn't seem to be interested in improving. That's the Edmonton Oilers. When we come back, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live at St. Vitale Center in the food hall for Toy Mountain in support of the the Salvation Army. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You've been listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast.
Catch the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca.